Kevin Espiritu is the creator of Epic Gardening, a multi-platform media production company which creates educational gardening content and has the simple mission of wanting to help 10 million people around the world learn how to grow plants. Kevin's calm, calculated approach to video making and his down-to-earth relatability has helped him attract over 1.1 million subscribers and nearly 70 million video views on YouTube alone. And as if that wasn't enough, Kevin has written two books, has a daily podcast, and manages one of the best gardening accounts that you can follow on Instagram. Let's cultivate some clapping hands and welcome to the podcast, Kevin Espiritu.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I like the cultivate little nod there.
Do you think that when people say, so, okay, I hear this from people sometimes. They'll say, you know, I can't grow anything. I don't have a green thumb. Do you think that's basically them just saying, I don't really want to try or I don't want to learn gardening? Or I kind of think it might be like when people say, oh, I just have two left feet. I can't dance. So, you know, they just.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I've always tried to figure out is why there's like certain classes of activities people think that talent is required and nothing else. And then other activities, everyone knows you can learn them, you know? And so I think with gardening, because it seems so like mystical, like you're growing something from a seed and how do you make it do that? They think that that has to be some like power within you that you possess, you know? And it's just like simply false. Like there's no such thing as a green thumb or a black thumb in the strictest sense, any more than there would be like, I don't know, in a woodworking analogy, like a rusty nail or a miter saw or something, you know, I don't know what the thing is, but it's just a skill set you can learn. For some reason it has this myth of, you know, you need to have some special talent.
Yeah. I do get that in woodworking too. People just think that, yeah, mm-hmm. you've got to have some sort of years of training and experience to do this thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, especially with gardening, we did it for thousands of years. So we wouldn't be here if a lot of us couldn't do it, you know.
February 2013 is when you registered the Epic Gardening YouTube channel. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in your life in and around that time.
Oh, man. Okay. So 2013, I would have been in the second place I lived in San Diego after college, which was kind of in like a college-y area of the city, Pacific Beach. I was living with my cousin and his friend, and I had started Epic Gardening, the website, but it was actually called something different at the time because I was just doing hydroponics, so I called it xponics.com. Really bad name. And so I rebranded it to Epic Gardening, and I think at the time, I mean, really, what was I doing at that point in my life? Nothing productive, I don't think. I had come out of college, and I was playing poker to pay for school. So I actually did pretty well in poker and was able to pay for school, and I was like investing in other players and stuff like that. But after I came out of school, I quit playing poker and I just started playing video games instead. Like that was a better choice. It wasn't, but I didn't know what else to do. I think I was doing like some web design at the time, building WordPress websites for people, just trying to like scrape up enough to not draw my savings down. And Epic Gardening came as a result of wanting to show my clients that I could like build a website. And then the YouTube channel just came because I thought it would be interesting to put the YouTube videos on the website, you know? And so I started making educational videos on YouTube to just for the purpose of embedding them on the blog. And that's kind of how it all started. So if you look at the first videos, it's like kind of like those old Khan Academy videos, you know, those ones where he's just drawing on the blackboard. I kind of copied that and did my version of that. And there's some hydroponic tutorials that are some of my first videos.
Do you find that it's difficult being a creator, a gardener in San Diego to reach people throughout a lot of the world who, especially in the wintertime, who are just, you know, under snow and can't garden? And, you know, to follow up on that, do you see that reflected in your views and engagement on your channel during those months?
Yeah, for sure. It's super seasonal, so views will go down maybe by half or more. And there's not much you can do about it because it really doesn't matter what you put out unless you... I've been thinking about ways to do it. Like I kind of shift my content more towards houseplants in the wintertime. I'll shift it more towards like more YouTube-y style stuff, like a reaction video to a plant hack or something like that. That should, in theory, be interesting at any point of the year. But there's such a thing, too, as like garden burnout. So when someone, you know, goes hard in spring, grows all the time in summer, and fall comes in, a lot of people in colder climates are kind of done mentally with the garden, and they're not even as interested until spring comes around. Like, you need the dormant period to get interested again. And so I've got a friend, also a gardening creator on YouTube, James Prigioni, and he's in Jersey. Yeah. So we talk all the time because he just goes away for winter. He just doesn't publish until he takes maybe 4 months off, which I've always said, like, James, like, you got to put something up at least, like, keep, you know, put a winter garden up or something. But maybe his approach works, you know? So it is a challenge. But what's interesting is I can grow pretty much anything I want to. And so from the perspective of making content, I can make it about almost any plant.
It's literally evergreen content, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. So you could produce that content in San Diego in the winter, and people can certainly discover it in the summer.
Sure. Yeah. What's interesting too is I've been trying to, you know, everyone's trying to evolve their content and improve it. And I think what I want to do is I want to do full seed to harvest guides. But if I do that, I can't publish it that year because who would care at the end of the season, right? Because I need to get to the end of the season to publish it. And so I've been thinking about this year, for example, I'll ramp my production up in spring and summer, but some of that I won't be able to publish until next year. But if I can drop, let's say on June 1st, complete seed to harvest tomato guide from last year, that video should be, in theory, the best video on growing tomatoes that someone can make. I just have to wait a year to do it, which is kind of annoying, but I'm trying to think more long term.
How do you organize and schedule your ideas? What does the next 6 months of Epic Gardening look like?
I have no clue. I use Notion to capture all the ideas and like keep track of where they are. And so as I've evolved to this like partial filming process, like right now I have a video in process about growing wine cap mushrooms. I have one in process about growing potatoes. Those should actually be out this year. And so I just sort of track. The hard part for me is if I do it that way, I have to film, let's say, one video in 10 to 12 different days over the course of 4 months. Like, that's just, I've never done it that way before, so it's difficult to do. And so what I try to do is I try to have, like, you know, the different formats of content, like a plant guide, a breakdown on a particular concept, like a YouTube-y reaction video type of thing. And I try to ramp it up in spring and fall off in fall and winter. So maybe three a week in spring and summer, and then move down in the fall and winter. That's my current theory. I don't know. I feel like I'm always changing things.
Right. At this point, how much of your content is the stuff that you kind of selfishly want to be growing, and how much is basically you listening to what the audience wants to see?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't do as good a job, I think, as I could at putting out stuff that everyone wants to see. Like, I try to make what I want to grow super interesting to other people. So like, I grew loofah gourds, which is a shower sponge that you can use. And so, I mean, that's pretty esoteric plant. You know, I don't think a lot of people are going to do it, but it did really well because it is inherently interesting, even if you don't want to grow it. But every time, like I just put a video out about nasturtium, which is a pretty, it's not the most common plant, but it's pretty common in the garden. And I've had that plant for months and months. I've grown nasturtium for years. I've never made a video about it because to me, it's just sort of in the background plant. It did fantastic. I did one on rosemary, on lavender, sort of the basic plants. I forget that's actually what most people are growing for their first time. I'm 5-10 years deep growing it. So there's like super basic plants I don't have guides out for, and I need to change that.
Do you find that the most requested videos are probably to do with tomatoes?
Yeah, in the edible world, tomatoes is the gateway drug plant for sure. it's tomatoes or basil, I think, are the two that get people the most. I could make videos on tomatoes. There's probably 20 more videos I could make on tomatoes, and they would all do really well. Yeah,
that's the only edible plant that we've been growing for a while now is just tomatoes every year, because I don't think you could buy a decent tomato that tastes good. And, you know, we lived in San Francisco for 10 years and we tried growing tomatoes on the fire escape in a cold, foggy environment. No, it did not work. They were just these stringy, leggy, horrible things that didn't grow. But now I'm up in Marin, so we have a sunny weather, and it's still, I still struggle every year, struggle with them.
Yeah. I mean, tomatoes are tricky. They're actually, I wouldn't say they're like the hardest crop I've ever grown for sure, because there's way more picky crops, but there's just a lot of ways you can go wrong. Because anytime you're growing a plant from seed through the literal fruit, because tomatoes, the fruit of the plant. I mean, that's not like lettuce, for example. We just harvest halfway through its life because it wants to throw a stalk up and create seeds and stuff. We just don't eat that. So tomatoes were growing through their full life cycle. So it's just a lot more opportunities for something to go wrong.
Hmm.
Yeah.
My wife loves your videos. I don't know how you deal with the amount of animosity that she has for you for the sake that you live in San Diego. further to that earlier comment, like it's just, it radiates from her. However, you have this beautiful space and
you need a greenhouse. You need a greenhouse, Chad.
you have the challenges of shooting outdoors, clearly, sun mm-hmm. and light and all of the rest. But I love how you just embrace that and allow sometimes that to be whatever. And some of your framing choices are excellent. So I'd love to know kind of what equipment do you use and what do some of your neighbors think when they look over and see?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting because, so I'll go with the equipment first. I think up till about 70,000 subs, I was just on a whatever phone I had. You know, so if you look at my old videos, you'll see like part of a couch is in the bottom of the shot because I didn't have a tripod, so I just put it on the couch, you know, and like the notifications were on the phone. And so there's this one old video where everyone liked them and the content was good, but there's like the top rated comment is like, my eardrums are bleeding, but I love the video or something like that, you know? So up until then, and then I went to a Canon 80D. Somewhere around 80. Oh, you know why? It's because I was going on a trip and I was going to collab with someone, like one of my first bigger collabs. So I was like, maybe I should have a real camera. And so I got a Canon 80D and a Rode VideoMic Pro, the mounted one, the shotgun mic, and a whatever tripod. And then I ran with that until I would say sometime last year. I switched to a Sony a7 III and I use a Sennheiser ME2 lapel with a Zoom H1N digital audio recorder. My editor has been really helpful. He's in the Philippines and he does like full scale wedding production. And so he knows a lot about gear. And so he'll send me stuff and he's like, you should probably upgrade to this. So he got me on the digital audio recorder thing instead of the shotgun. Cause like you're right. I'm filming outdoors. I'm filming in front yard almost all the time. People walk by, cars walk by, it's trash day. There's a helicopter path over me, you know? And so the lapel changed the game a lot. And then the thing that I really love now is I bought a, it's like a monitor that mounts to the top of the thing. So there's a fancy one. I got Smart HD, small HD. I didn't get that one. I got the like bootleg version of it. But I use that because I film myself almost exclusively. So I just flip it around so I can frame myself without having to record and re-record. So that's been really helpful. And I think that's why my framing has gotten at least tolerable. Because I don't really think of myself as a video maker. You know, like I don't really know a lot of the skills in that world. And so I just hopefully do an okay job.
Well, you are now a video maker.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Do you have problems with like sunlight, shifting sunlight? I mean, you don't get a whole lot of clouds and things in San Diego.
Yeah, but I mean, you're right. We don't get a lot of clouds, which means when can I film where there's not harsh shadows?
Right.
You know, so I have to film. I try to film in golden hour like as much as I can. But what I've started to do is just not. I just film in full daylight and just let it be. Don't worry about it too much, because I mean I think it's kind of nice in the garden community. You're outdoor. They know you're in the garden. They know right. It's not supposed to be. They're not like looking for. It's not like a tech channel, right? Where you know everything needs to be super polished and the B-roll has to be crispy and all that stuff. Honestly, just taking some of the elements from like the Peter McKinnon style people and putting it into the garden world is already a dramatic level up versus what other people I think are doing.
Let's rewind a little bit to March mm-hmm. 2020. Let me just confirm. Yes, something called the coronavirus.
Oh, man.
I remember.
Which led into, I think, it was really quick math, but I think about 500,000 new subscribers over the course of 3 months.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about what that was like on the receiving end? And then also during that time, you're obviously going through whatever your personal story was with lockdown or whatever that was. So what did that kind of time look like?
Well, so that was insane. we were fortunately one of the industries that did an insane benefit from it. Like we're talking 10x, 10, 15x, 20x growth. Because I have I have brand partners in the industry too, and all of them, everyone was sold out of everything 24/7. I've been sold out of products that I sell for a year and a half, and I'm buying as much as I can, you know. So I'm selling them out on pre-order, and that's when that started. And so yeah, I mean, I remember March. We're almost at the year anniversary. Honestly, it's March 12th. Like we went into lockdown somewhere around this time, and almost as soon as we went into it, the channel just went doop, and it went up. And part of that is because so every gardening channel went up, but mine for some reason went way up. And the only thing I can attribute that to is I have a lot of videos in the backlog. My company name has the word gardening in it, so that probably helped a little bit. And then I have every other platform playing in unison, you know? So most people who have a channel didn't also have a blog that was getting a bunch of traffic already, right? Or a podcast. And so everything compounded together. So yeah, there was days I woke up. I remember there was like a 3-day period where I woke up and it was plus 20K a day. And I was just like, what's happening? Like, this is so weird. Cause I think around a year ago, I was at maybe 195 to 205 subs on YouTube. And then by the end of that month, I was at like 400 or something like that. So I doubled in a month, you know, and I was like, what is happening? And what was really interesting was it took however long, like 7 years to get to the 200, you know, and then it took a month to double it. And so there's some fall off of the 200,000 subs, right, just over time, but there's no fall off on the new 200,000 because they're a month old. And so I had to be like, okay, well, what kind of content do I make now? Because it's like I have two audiences, you know? And so I started putting out, that's probably when I took YouTube seriously, I would say, because it was always a multi-platform sort of summed up strategy. And when YouTube popped, I was like, okay, well, how do I get good at YouTube specifically? Because I used to make videos if they would fit in with everything else I was doing. And now I make videos because they're going to help my YouTube audience specifically, you know? And so that was a big change. I started doing the cultivate the like button type of cheesy, you know, the YouTube-y kind of stuff. I have some fun with it. And I never did that before. I just sort of tried to level up everything, put way more videos out. It was a very, very hectic time. There's a lot going on besides YouTube just in the business at that time too. So it was crazy, man. It was really, really wild.
You were really smart to just jump in on that and noticed that was trending for you. I know that in like early or mid-March, right when the lockdown went into effect, you had the like post-apocalyptic gardening, oh, yeah. You know, so it kind of fit right in. And at least here in California, nurseries were one of the few places that were allowed to stay open.
They were essential. You're right. Well, what was crazy about this was in 2019, I had done a challenge that I called the Apocalypse Grow Challenge, where I tried to live off my garden for a month and I did it. But I had all the footage and it was just so much random footage that I didn't publish anything. I just put it up on Instagram for that month, just in stories, but I did have the footage. And so when the actual apocalypse hit with the COVID, I put out some basic guides, like raised bed gardening tips, you know, like shady plant, fast growing plant type of stuff. But I put out like 9 crops that I would grow in the apocalypse, which was very timely. And then I put out the full vlog of that thing I did the year before. And so I had a couple, like, you know, I had some gas in the tank, I guess, to take advantage of that wave. And yeah, it was insane.
It's funny because as YouTubers, we need to constantly remind ourselves that the majority of the people that are watching our content, regardless of the size of our audience, are probably new people. Usually it is 60 to 80% of the people that are watching a video aren't subscribed, don't know the little kind of like whatever. And we had the same thing when lockdown happened because strangely, a lot of people thought about cleaning during that time. So we realized that, I mean, we had a larger existing audience and we had been doing it for a while longer. So a lot of people had come and then decided to subscribe still kind of knowing who we were. But at the same time, you're right. It's an interesting way to word it. It's like two separate audiences because you kind of have to go back to the beginning and reset for these new people because they're the most engaged people. It's not the people that were subscribed 5 years ago because they're, you know, kind of they come and go as they please. Now we have this engaged audience that's there every single upload. So now you're speaking to like these new people. So you almost have to change the way you speak in the videos.
Man, it was really wild. Like I did a video on how to grow ginger in containers. Just really, it only took me an hour. I was just like, well, this is, I'm doing this right now. I'll just film it while I do it. I'll go to the grocery store, get the ginger, this and that. And I had an inkling that it would do well because every other ginger video had a lot of views for some reason. I was like, I wonder why. Like, what is it about ginger? Put that video up. That video is my best video of all time. Views-wise. It's like, it'll probably hit 7 million views. It's just like, what? I've watched it 25 times probably trying to figure out like why that video. I don't really know. But to what you're saying, Chad, that video is responsible for 180,000 subs. Just that video. And so I'm like, okay, well, that chunk of people mentally decided to subscribe specifically because of that video. So even today, that's like 20% of the audience, right? And so like, okay, well, what should I serve up to them? Do I need to do more container-based videos? More what is it about that did that? So it's you're right. It's like really challenging to kind of think about the segments of your audience.
You have a very multi-pronged approach to earning an income, it looks like. You've got everything from, well, not just your media channels. You have a very large Instagram following, YouTube, but you are also, it looks like, a reseller of some, those birdies, right? Mm-hmm. Which are like raised beds, I guess, that you assemble yourself, as well as other products for the garden. And you're an author of books. So tell us about some of that, all of this kind of stuff that comes together to make your business.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, if we want to go zoom in back, do you want to go kind of back to the start and like play it forward?
Yeah.
Okay. So 2013, right? Like you were saying, Chad, blogs make money in very minimal ways. So at least back then, it's like you put ads on your blog. So ads are still on the blog today because it's nice, you know, it's nice passive income on the traffic that we have. You make affiliate income on the blog. So those are the first two methods, like what everyone does, right? But what I have always tried to do, I guess I'm sort of obsessed with like being fragile to a risk. And so I was like, okay, well, I guess YouTube's next, because at least if the blog traffic goes down, maybe YouTube will be doing well. But YouTube monetizes more or less the same way. You've got your display ads that are coming on like pre-roll and all that. And you got some affiliate stuff, but it unlocked brands, right? So the first brand I ever worked with was WD-40. And I charged $150 to do a video. And then I went to a blogger conference with all these, you know, cooking and mommy bloggers and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, here, like I'm really good at SEO. And they're like, oh my God, amazing. And then they were telling me about their brand deals. And I was like, what is wrong with me?
$150.
I was like, I did this one with WD-40. It was like $150. I think I undercharged a little bit. Like I was thinking 500. And this one mommy blogger was like, oh yeah, I charge $2,000 a month passive for kick 'em on soy sauce just to include them in one recipe a month. And I was like, what? And so brands sort of was the next step for me. But I kind of overdid brands early on because I was just so stoked about it. And I would work, I mean, I wouldn't work with brands I didn't like, but I would just work with brands. And I didn't vet like super, super hard, you know? And so then the next step was to delete most of the brands and only go long-term with a select amount of brands, kind of like a sponsored skateboarder. Like you wouldn't have two wheel companies you worked with, you would have one. So I have like one soil company, one tool company, one online tree company, that type of thing. So that's been really great because it set me up for the next phase, which was this products that you were saying, Steve. So the store. So I thought about it and I was like, okay, well, what are the risks now as a creator? What could happen to me? And I thought, okay, well, Amazon affiliate income is pretty good right now. And display ads are pretty good. What would hurt those? Well, traffic could go down. Probably not going to happen, but it could. And then I said, well, Jeff Bezos, 100% doesn't care about affiliates, because the mission of Amazon is to make the customer the most happy person. And affiliates don't do that. So I said, we're a means to an end to get a huge audience for Amazon to serve the customer better. So 100% those commissions will come down at some point in time, right? So I said, the only way to protect myself from that is to sell something myself directly to my audience. And so that's when I set up the birdies thing. So I'm now an exclusive distributor for them in America.
Describe what that is to people.
Yeah. So the birdies beds, I got sent them in 2017. It's a stainless steel galvanized powder coated metal raised bed. And they come in panels, and so you can configure them in different dimensions, and they're a little taller than the average bed. And so they're really good for, like, if you're renting, you can just pick them up and move them. They're good if you're an elder, like we have a ton of elderly clients that couldn't garden and now can again, because they can stand and work in like a 30 inch bed.
That's great.
And so, you know, I bugged them for honestly over a year. Every quarter I would email them and say, hey, are you looking for a distributor in America? Like, everyone asks about these beds. Because I think what a lot of creators don't realize is the hardest asset to get is attention online. It's the hardest one. It takes forever to get it, right? But once you get it, what you have is an audience of people that are responding to what you put out, right? And all you have to do, you don't need to like invent something or be very fancy. Just listen to what they're commenting on the most and then just give them that. It's really not that hard. And so when I put the beds in, you know, Instagram posts or YouTubes, every like 10% of the comments are like, what is that? What's that thing? I want that. How can I get that? So it's, I wasn't some genius. I was just like, hey guys, let me make them available here, you know? And so I started to do that. And then lo and behold, when COVID happened, Amazon cut their commissions for gardening by 50%. Wow. And so in a day I was making X amount of money, and it was a multi five figure loss in a day. Per month. So, you know, it was quite a bit of money to lose, but I'd been doing the products for a year by then. So it wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? Whereas someone else would have gotten hit probably and just like scrambled to come up with a new revenue stream. And so that was sort of the impetus for the products. And now what I decided to do with the product store is, it's like, well, how can I contrast against everyone else in the space? There's really not that many garden creator sellers, but you know, like even just another retailer. I was like, okay, well, I'll only offer the best product in each category that I can find, you know? So there's not going to be another bed that I'm going to sell, right? You know, there's not going to be another worm composting bin. It'll just be the best one I can find. And then the craziest part about all this is I don't have to pay for acquisition. Like another direct to consumer company, like all the ones that YouTubers do the brand partnerships with, like Dollar Shave Club or whatever. They're all blowing money on paid ads. I get paid to make my ads, but my ads aren't ads. They're just informational content that the products happen to be in, you know? So yeah, I don't know. That was kind of a long-winded answer, but hopefully
that's a great space to be in, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've got the books too, right?
Yeah, the books. Like, yeah.
How's the process of writing a gardening book? I would assume there's probably a lot of people involved in that, or am I wrong?
Well, I mean, it depends on if you self-publish or not, right? So if you self-pub, it's just you and you do whatever you want. The thing about it is if you self-pub, you get 100% of the upside of the book. If you don't, you really don't make much money on books in general. Because before Epic Gardening, I was working at a publishing company called Scribe Media. I was the second employee there. And it was kind of like a different twist on publishing, not like a traditional publishing company. Lo and behold, after that, I ended up signing a book deal with a traditional publishing company. But what they get you that you can't get anywhere else is distribution. They can put your book in places that you can't put your book. So I could go to Barnes & Noble and see it versus good luck me getting in there myself, you know? But yeah, the process of writing a book is really, I really don't think it's that fun, honestly. Like, I'd rather make any other type of content, I think, than books. Fortunately, the first book has done pretty well.
They're beautiful, the photographs, everything.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, that's another thing that the publishing company will help. They'll do the interior design, right? Otherwise you got to pay and hire for that. And I couldn't do it myself. I'll tell you that right now. But yeah, I mean, it's a very arduous process because you might have to write the book over the course of maybe like 5 to 12 months. And then it takes another X months to get it designed and printed. And I mean, it takes like 2 years to get a book out ish, you know, a year if you're really on top of the ball. And then I don't know if a lot of people look, have either of you done a book?
Chad has.
Yeah.
Chad,
we did a book with Penguin Random House and did the book tour. Yeah. And so I can fully appreciate being able to go to a Barnes & Noble and actually see your book versus trying
to
do
crazy,
that yourself.
Right? It's a crazy feeling.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like Chad, you know, but like maybe listeners don't know that the way a book works, if you go with a traditional publisher is they give you an advance, let's say it's 10 grand or something like that. You're supposed to use the advance to write the book. So you're spending that money for at least most of it. I decided to not spend as much of it as I could and try to be really scrappy. So even if the book didn't sell anything, at least it was somewhat worth the time. So I kind of protected myself there. But yeah, like, so let's say then you make like $2 a copy or something, which is somewhat standard, I would say $2-3 a copy. Then you need to sell, what, 5,000 books before you even make another dollar of the money you already spent. And that's what people don't get about books. They think you're like, oh, you're a fancy author. It's like, I might have a book with my name on it, but what's coming back to me is not very, you know, not very substantial. Yeah.
And you also realize that once you've gone and exhausted your hardcore fan base, who of course are going to run out and get your book when you do the book launch and whatnot, then you are stuck. Not stuck, but then you're faced with the challenge of, okay, now sell 5,000 copies now that everybody who was going to run out and buy it.
And that's what
prove
it is.
To the people who are in bookstores and see the book and don't have the connection of the YouTube videos or whatnot.
Yeah, so that's the thing people don't get, because I ran like maybe 40 book launches for this company Scribe that I worked for. And so I saw people who did well and who didn't do well. And everyone who did well on a volume basis, because like some of these people they needed to sell books to like 500 of their, you know, industry insiders. And then that would get them these massive contracts. That's a different thing. But if you're trying to, you know, sell a lot of books, you almost can't rely on your audience, because they will tap out, like you said. So you have to make a book that your audience is going to tell people about. Like you have to have the word of mouth engine working. Otherwise, you're right. You're just never going to earn the advance out. And you're kind of be like, okay, well, I did a lot. Because books are so much work for so little reward. Not that it's all about money, but you know what I mean.
Versus, I think a lot of people probably think of authors and they think of like James Patterson and some of these mega level authors. It's kind of like people think of Hollywood, you know, A-listers as opposed to people working in community theater, you know.
It's a totally. Big difference. Books still hold this sort of vaulted air, you know, even as they become easier to make. But yeah, I mean, honestly, the ROI, if you went straight business on it, just make YouTube videos instead of make books. It's going to reach more people and make more money, you know?
I remember the lasting feeling after doing the book was you realize that Penguin Random House moves on to the next week's author's releases. Yeah. And you realize that the launch date goes in the rearview mirror, the less focus you end up kind of getting at the same time that you did maybe in the first week of your book launch or whatnot. So
yeah,
that's the other
thing. Unless your book sort of pops off in some way, they'll move on. Yeah. It's crazy.
Let me ask you a random question here about gardening. And now that cannabis is legal in California, most of the U.S., you get a lot of people asking you weed growing questions. And is that something you would really consider, or do you think that would probably be a little dicey on YouTube?
I've thought about it. So, because California, it's been medically legal for a while. And so I've grown it in the past. And I don't really like using it, so it's not really for me. But actually, botanically, it's a very interesting plant to grow. And so I've thought about doing a series of like veggie gardener grows weed for the first time or something like that, because a lot of people want me to grow it. I just don't know. There's no real benefit for me to do it if it's going to put the channel at risk. You know, I've got unlimited content I can make. It would be really interesting. So I'd almost need to like know nothing bad would happen if I did it, but I would like to do it. It would be fun.
It's probably one of those check boxes when you upload a video.
It probably would not be monetized, I bet.
Right.
Let's talk a bit about the team that you have at Epic Gardening.
Sure.
What are some of the, you mentioned that you have an editor that puts work in there. Who are some of the other people that you have working behind the scenes there?
Yeah. So the first hire I ever made was a writer. So because the blog was everything at the beginning, right? And so I wrote maybe the first 300 articles, and then I hired a writer with like more gardening experience than I've been alive. And so she was the first hire, and now she's the editor in chief of the blog, and the blog has like 6 to 8 writers that'll write, you know, here and there pieces. And so that's sort of one segment of it. And then you're right, I have the YouTube editor, the video editor. Video editor, because he'll do different platforms. I have the podcast editor. And then I've just made a hire for an in-person garden manager. So someone who can come around and help out, like just make sure things are looking good, like making sure things aren't dying. Because I'm running, like, this season I'll have like 100 plus different varieties of plants going, and mentally with running everything else, I just need help to maintain all of that. And so I have that. And then I also have an assistant that I hired when things got crazy in the pandemic last year. So I hired an assistant who's local, so she can, you know, do things in the real world too. So that's the team. It's going to get a little bigger because we're going to be warehousing our product pretty soon. So we'll need like a fulfillment team. But yeah, that's it right now. It's pretty lean.
Well, congratulations on the growth of your business. That's impressive. Coming from somebody who was playing poker, do you find that any of that experience you got from poker has helped out with your?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, so I went to UC Santa Barbara, and came out with an economics accounting degree. But I got really good grades in high school. And then in college, I got like maybe a 3.5 or something, but I went to maybe 40% of my classes, I would say, because I was just like, I'm not going to be an accountant. I know that, but I'm too deep in the major to like change it. And so, yeah, I played poker. I would almost consider that the college education I got. But yeah, I mean, for me, I think it was a fantastic education because it's real world stakes. Like if you make a mistake, you lose money. If you don't, you win. Obviously, there's luck involved. So it's sort of this weird microcosm of the real world, kind of. Because like you can make a good, let's say, decision on your channel, right? And something weird happens in the world, like the coronavirus, and your channel tanks or it skyrockets. That's the luck element, right? And so I've thought a lot about how poker relates, and there's just so many different little micro lessons that came from it.
Interesting, interesting. Do you ever find yourself in the need of bluffing?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was actually really a really bad bluffer even when I played poker, so. It was a leak in my game, so to speak. So I don't think, yeah, bluffing and that one hasn't transferred over.
Can't bluff your way through gardening either.
It's hard. Yeah, it's either the plant's living or it's not living. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
When did you move to the Epic Homestead?
So that happened in, I bought the place in June or end of May of last year. And then I didn't move in until September though, because we did a TV show. We shot a show here. And so it was almost like a set for a while, and I didn't want to live in the set, and I didn't have any furniture. I literally had nothing. So, I bought it last year, and so I've been here since September.
How exciting was it to stand in that yard and just look around and be like, my whole life now, like my entire life is focusing around me doing this gardening stuff on YouTube. Well, on YouTube and all the other places you do it, but did that kind of like come home to roost?
No, it was crazy because I had been looking for houses because I was like, okay, you know, the channel's going well, the beds are selling well, all that kind of stuff, and I was like, well, the most obvious next step is more space, but how do I get more space in San Diego? I kind of have to buy something because I need the freedom to do whatever I want on the land, right? And I was looking, and this one came up on the MLS. I drove down like the second it came up, because I saw the lot size. I had this filter that the lot size had to be over a certain amount, otherwise it wouldn't come through, because I just wanted like a lot of space. And I saw it and I called my realtor. I was like, yo, we need to offer on this like now. And we did, and we went through this little bidding war. You know, it was a lot of drama because it was my first, you know, I've never bought anything before. So I was like, whoa, this is intense. And got it. And then when I got it, I was like, I'm not a very like emotional, you know, I don't really like, I probably have some emotional, you know, maturity issues or something. Like I don't like identify with them that well, but that was an emotional moment for sure to just be like, whoa, like the channel, the company has brought me here to like further the whole thing.
Now this is where you live. Did you actually see the inside of the home, or were you just like, the yard's perfect?
Dude, I did not care. I didn't care. I saw the land, and it was literally like a flat square, a perfectly flat, untouched square. And so I was like, there's nothing here, which most people would be mad about, but I was like, that's actually perfect for me. And then I briefly looked in the house, but when I put an offer in, I didn't even look inside the house though. I just looked through the window. Cause I couldn't get the key, you know, whatever, the realtor wasn't there. So yeah, I really didn't care. The house is like 1,000 square feet and the lot is 13,000. So that was what I wanted. Yeah.
What are some of the trends in gardening right now? And I have a feeling some of these trends just become standard. I mean, for a long time, it seemed like organic gardening was a trend, but it seems like that's just the way it is now. Everybody's kind of seems to have gotten on board with that. And I know at least in California, kind of local native landscaping, and not so much with the edible gardening, but rest of the gardening seems to be very popular.
Yeah, you're right. I think you're right. Like the organic thing, that's the way most people garden now. I don't think not a lot of people that I notice at least are like using synthetic fertilizers, spraying their plants all the time. So maybe, I guess it has kind of faded into the norm.
Yeah.
And the native plant thing, you're right. It's in San Diego, especially because in Cali, it's mostly just a water issue, you know?
Right.
Lawns in California are very expensive to run. And so the native thing is big, but that's big everywhere. It's just probably a little bigger here because it makes way more sense here. You get a lot of rain in a different climate. You can grow a lot more and you don't have to be as, you know, conservative. Houseplants have been big for a long time. Houseplants got really big in the pandemic because obviously people wanted the green and the mental health and all that. I think what I hope to be a trend coming forward is, I want to call it like a home production gardener. So like not someone who's growing a couple things of basil, but not like a market farmer, someone in the middle who's like, I'm going to try to grow like 20% of all the food I eat, you know, given the space I have, because most people can't get to 100%.
Right.
But yeah, that's what I think is we're going towards. It kind of feels that way.
What are microgreens? I really don't know. I know that they were a thing and I know that was popular and I know that I believe you had a business at one point.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So microgreens are, so when you start a seed, right, the seed sprouts and you have the seed leaves that come out and then you have like the first set of what we call the true leaves. They look different. They look like the actual leaf of the plant. That's where you harvest a microgreen and you sow them very, very densely together. So you get like sort of this mat of greens. And yeah, I did. You're right. I had a business in 2014 growing and selling microgreens to restaurants in San Diego. And it was, you know, it was short-lived. It was just kind of a test little thing. But yeah, microgreens are one of the better things you can grow. Like, let's say you're an apartment grower and you kind of want to do something edible. There's not a whole lot of options for you besides that, unless you have like a really nice sunny balcony, you know? So microgreens indoors is a fantastic way to do it. Cause you can make like these little micro salads, really easy to grow, pretty cheap to grow. So it's a nice one.
How much of what you grow is flowers versus edibles? Cause I know, I think you started out in really strong in the edible space.
Oh yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. Are you moving more into flowers? I got into gardening last year, quite like a bunch of people. I did a mix last year I did some cut flowers and I did some fruits and veggies. I love cut flowers. So I'm going to go 100% cut flower this year. Cause I love flowers.
Dude, I'm actually with you on this. Yeah. I think, My flower love has definitely grown. Cause I guess like in the beginning I was just like, if it's not edible, what's the point? And that was actually a kind of a dumb philosophy. Just if you look at how ecology works, it just doesn't make sense. And you want to create an environment in your garden where it sort of manages itself and, you know, pollinators and flowers and that is a big part of that. But yeah, I've really gotten into them and I actually was thinking about doing a cut flower garden, like a little micro garden doing that. For now, I'm doing a lot of like relatively easy flowers. Like I'm doing sunflowers, borage, you know, zinnias, calendulas, these types of things. You could use them as cut flowers for sure, but I'm not. Oh, I'm doing roses for my first time this year too. And so I'm trying to kind of, I just think it's cool like you. But it is sort of unconventional, I guess, to see like two dudes growing cut flowers and which I think is cool. Like, I think that's nice. Because if I do it casually, I guess, and not like make a big deal out of it and just think that it's interesting, I think you can break the mold of like only, you know, only girls do this or whatever. It just get more people doing it.
I felt so good when I was in the garden, like being around flowers versus just being around plants and just kind of like some of the other stuff. And I find that most people, when I tell them that, it's like, oh, I have a bunch of raised, you know, garden beds in the back. And they'd be like, what are you growing? What are you eating? What are you growing? It's like, no, it's actually flowers. I'm really into dahlias right now. And you're right. Yeah. Like people are like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
Right. Cause they look at you and they just don't think they're like every other obsessed flower person I know doesn't look like Chad, you know?
Right.
And so you pattern interrupt their brain a little bit. And it's kind of interesting. And I think what I've noticed is just given, cause what's weird is in my industry, I'm an outlier demographically. Right. Whereas like my cousin who has a fishing YouTube channel, he's 33-year-old guy. So it kind of makes sense. So I think what's interesting is the just covering stuff the way I approach it versus maybe a more traditional looking or appearing gardener, it attracts a different type of person who maybe wouldn't have done it otherwise, you know? I think there's something to that.
I did the same thing. We moved into this place. I got really into growing flowers, cut flowers, learning how to actually do flower arrangements in in vases and that sort of thing. That's when I really learned the difference between perennials and annuals when it comes to flowers. And if you really want that pop of color, wow, nothing beats the annuals, you know?
It's hard, man. It's hard. Yeah. Yeah. I've been obsessed with, there's a couple flower growers on Instagram and YouTube that are doing it as a proper business. And it's fascinating it's just a totally different thing.
Do you have any places to go for inspiration? I know for me, it was literally Disneyland. Some of their flower gardens there are unbelievable. And just the way the hanging baskets are just packed with flowers and they come out the sides and it's
really cool. Yeah. Oh, Disney actually has amazing hydroponic gardens as well. But there's some great botanic gardens in San Diego. For me, because I still am more interested in edibles, like seeing a farm is really interesting to me. All these different market farms. I think San Diego has the most small farms per capita of any city. So there's a lot of opportunity to see that kind of stuff. And honestly, I just kind of browse around on like Pinterest or YouTube, and I just suck up every idea that I can and sort of mishmash them in my head and try to apply them to my space. And so that's where I get a lot of the inspo, or just from the audience, like, hey, have you thought about doing this? Like, someone will send me some idea that I didn't think of, you know?
What does Kevin do when he's not gardening and not making YouTube videos? Well, or not doing anything related to Epic Gardening? How about that?
That's what I wish I had a better answer for. So my girlfriend she's a business owner too. She does jewelry photography, like high-end jewelry photography, but she's way more balanced in her life than me. And so she's always saying like, you need to get some hobbies again. Cause before this really took off, like I was rock climbing. I was like playing guitar, playing piano, like skateboarding and stuff like that. But now I'm like managing a team. There's a lot of content production to do. Like the warehouse is spinning up, all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, why would I spend an hour skateboarding? It doesn't even make sense, you know? And so I wish I had a better answer. Like right now there's not a lot. And that's actually kind of a problem. Like my health has gone down a little bit because of that. So I kind of have to figure that out, honestly.
Well, it's a common problem. As soon as you are really running a successful business, you have to spend so much time. You realize how valuable your time is. Really.
Your time just literally gets more valuable in monetary terms, at
Absolutely.
Least. And that's the thing that's hard, is I have to be like, this happened in poker too, when I was starting to do really well in poker. Is, you know, in Santa Barbara, you could go out and go to a party and I would be like, okay, well, is the party 4 hours, you know, out at the party worth not making $1,000 off this French bad poker player that I'm playing right now or whatever, you know? And it's not, I don't think it's a good way to view life, but it's nevertheless, I struggle against it sometimes because I'm like, hey, this hour is actually like really valuable, you know? So it's hard.
But right now you have a lot of attention. So you are also, you know, this is a bit of an exception to the norm where you're in a position where there's a lot of opportunity. So you are taking the time to invest
in that. Well, I've just thought about it and I was like we were talking about with the pandemic, like you guys both, I would assume, Steve, that woodworking also popped, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was like
how much did you guys grow over the course of this last year?
It grew probably 20-25%. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Easily.
Yeah.
And in terms of course sales, because I sell, you know, online courses too, those things, you know, doubled.
Yeah, that's so crazy. The courses is the one model I haven't really tackled. But yeah, I mean, the way I thought about it was like, if I go hard during this very obvious opportunity, like I didn't need to be a genius to see the capitalization of this. I was like, if I go really hard on this, the things I've always worried about for my life, because we didn't grow up like, you know, really well off or anything like that, and had some hardships. Like my dad passed when I was 12, and my mom's had a chronic illness since I've been alive, basically. And so, you know, I was like, if I go hard here, I actually won't have to work. I didn't make a lot of money in my 20s after poker. You know, like there was years I lost money. And so I was like, if I go really hard here, that won't be a worry ever again. And so I did do that. And now I'm like, okay, well, we're coming past the point of like, okay, I did capitalize on it and I'm making smart choices, I hope. So I need to bring back, you know, the other human activities that we all do in life.
Yeah.
And see how that goes.
A couple of things I wanted to bring up. First of all, I'm totally stealing your idea on Instagram for you have an about series of stories, a story highlight where just it tells about. And I was able to look at that and I learned so much about you just from that. I thought that was a brilliant, brilliant idea.
You know what? Further to that point, one thing I told Melissa about it as well, because as an interviewer or as like now that we're doing the podcast, to go and research and find out about someone, you making that a very easy thing for a journalist or for someone who's doing a thing, it was one of those things where I saw it and I'm like, oh, that's absolutely brilliant. We should pin a story about us. And then I think you just asked a bunch of people, you know, hey, do you have any questions for me?
Well, the reason why I did that is because up until like pandemic times, I responded, I would say, to just about every comment on every platform 100% of the time, because I figured no one else is doing that. So the fact that I do it should make people, I mean, it's valuable, right? I know if someone I followed responded to me, I'd be appreciative.
Yeah.
And maybe I would tell someone, right? So it goes back to that word of mouth thing, but I can't do it anymore. It's not possible. And so I was like, I need to come up with like scalable ways to answer the most common questions that I get. And so that's why I did that. I didn't even think about the interview angle. It's kind of nice. It's clever. I'm glad it helped.
It's sometimes very difficult when you're trying to find just some interesting pieces of information. You have a LinkedIn page. There was actually a lot of information to make it, you know, to build up and tell your story. So well done there.
Hey,
let's finish up by asking what's next. What is next for Epic Gardening?
So I think what's next is kind of what I've hinted at a little bit is the next model. Like I was talking about, you know, what am I fragile to in the business, right? And so the products were the big move. And I was using a third-party logistics company to fulfill the products because I don't have a warehouse. And so now I do, or I will at least. And the reason why I did that is because number one, it straight up saves money, which means I can pass that money through to the customer, which means that they're happier, which means that the word of mouth is better, which means the business grows. But number two, I can really focus on what I want to do. So like that's like the products are now dramatically more profitable than everything else combined. Mm. And so obviously my focus has to go a little bit more towards that because the mission is to teach, we actually upped it to 100 million people how to grow food. And so that means I have to start thinking differently. Like, do I buy land in the Philippines? Cause I'm half Filipino and a lot of my team's in the Philippines. And do I start translating my videos to different languages, you know? And so the warehouse and controlling the whole customer experience of the store should help me get the capital to invest it back into that mission. And so that's kind of what I'm thinking now. We'll see where it goes, but I would think it'd be really cool to have different sort of properties and show how to grow in different conditions, different cultures, different climates. I've thought about doing different language channels. So like Epic Gardening Spanish, Epic Gardening Hindi, and then having someone who's native level on both languages dub them and just give them half the revenue of the channel for doing it. And they can just run it as almost their own sub channel. So I was like, how do you reach more people? You know? So those are just some ideas. I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
That is fantastic. And also, can I say, you have a great voice for doing YouTube or podcasting. You must have people tell you it's just a very soothing voice.
I do get that. It's actually super interesting you say that because I put a video up a couple days. I put the nasturtium video up, my most recent video, at least as of this recording. And I got a comment of, I'm going through your whole back catalog because I'm a new mother and my baby stops crying when I put your videos on. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, I need to start Epic Nursing or something, like epic child
care. Epic ASMR. Yeah.
Epic ASMR. Yeah. And then I thought it was really funny. And so I posted it up on Insta. I was like, hey, epic nursing coming soon or something stupid like that. And I got more comments about that. I don't know. I mean, I did do Toastmasters for like 4 years, that public speech club. And then I did improv comedy for a year and a half. And so I think maybe that helped with the speaking stuff. And then obviously just doing daily podcasts teaches you how to speak without at least too much filler and sort of in a pleasing way, I guess. I don't really know what to... attributed to.
Well, it's been a thrill for us to have you on here, and I hope you can join us again sometime, yeah. Especially during the, once we hit peak gardening season, I'm sure that there'll be lots more questions.
Hey, thank you guys so much.